I'm Mariah Wolfel, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around till the end for a roundup of the biggest stories happening in Chicago. But first, federal immigration enforcement is still happening in and around Chicago, not at the levels we saw in the fall during Operation Midway Blitz, but it's still ongoing and very much a source of stress and worry for immigrants in our area without legal status. A new analysis from WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times shows that 580 people were detained in the Chicago area during the first 2.5 months of the year. And as ICE has shifted tactics, so too have the advocates who respond when federal agents show up in our area. In this next conversation, we'll hear from two so-called rapid responders. They're the folks who track ICE activity, respond in real time, and help connect the detained and their families to legal services. At the table to help me break it down, Cristobal Cavazos is the executive director of Casa DuPage Workers Center, a rapid response network that operates in Elgin, Villa Park, and other suburbs. Mimi Wiracocha is a lead organizer with Pilsen Unidos por Nuestra Orgullo, known as Puño, and WBEZ immigration reporter Adriana Cardona Magigad. We all remember what immigration enforcement looked like at the height of Operation Midway Blitz. The raids, the tear gas and pepper spray, the chaos. We started with what enforcement looks like today.
What I'm hearing from a lot of activists and advocates and people on the ground, and even as I follow and talk to people on, you know, in the neighborhoods, it seems like the enforcement is a lot more targeted. It's not as, as the typical day used to be, you know, hearing from immigration agents or that immigration agents were in some sort of location and rounding up people and arrests were happening. Like we were seeing last September and even October, over 100 arrests happening per day. That's not happening. It's more targeted. As we heard probably last week, we heard that some of these arrests were happening outside of courts. Cook County courts have been targeted recently. I know that a representative with the Public Defender's Office was saying that since February, her office has recorded arrests happening almost every week. So it's definitely happening, but it's more quiet now.
Okay. And Cristobal, can you tell us about the communities you serve and how folks are feeling there today? Do they feel any safer now than they did given this changing nature of the deportations in Chicago?
Yeah, good morning. It's good to be here. It's Adriana saying we're seeing more surgical, what we're calling surgical raids.
Okay.
You know, they seem more planned, more plotted. They're often looking for one person in particular, but our fear is the collateral damage. Even Tom Homan, the border czar, we'll take whoever we can get. So we're seeing right now, we're in DuPage County. We have a wide swath of territory, like essentially everything that's west of Chicago, DuPage, Aurora, Elgin, Bensonville, Melrose Park, the airport area. We have patrols there. There's been a real flourishing of community engagement and activism of people that are, you know, we're never into activism, are out there patrolling. Retired teachers of mine are out there patrolling. You name it. But we're seeing maybe about two or three a day. We didn't see anything yesterday. You know, that was a good. But about two or three targeted raids. And that's why it gets scary, because now it's, you know, they can hit you anytime, anywhere. It's like a lightning strike. And that's why our method, which is we call ourselves a People's Patrol, we were actively on the street all day long, you know, starting at 4:30 in the morning for some of us. Being out there on the street, watching cars, watching traffic patterns, you know, seeing agents, looking around, going to places like courthouses and being out there, bus stops. We just want to be on the streets all the time. That's what we call agitation.
And Mimi, same question to you. Since Operation Midway Blitz, do the communities you work with feel any safer now than they did during that time?
In short, yes, because we have seen, like our, you know, people here are saying less you know, daily tactics. However, I know that we have been seeing an increase in even, like Adriana was mentioning, courthouses and ICE being outside of them, having detained people every week, going to or coming from, including on CTA, you know, bus line. And so that's something that people are unfortunately starting to hear about and get a little bit more afraid, which is why we're doing patrols as well at the courthouses so that people can feel safe going to courts. And, you know, whether they are a survivor going to the domestic violence courthouse, which we've seen people get detained at, and as well as traveling from and to, so that they can feel safer. So that's why we're doing this, is so that people do feel safer as more people are engaged, more people are trained, and more people are responding.
And I imagine trying to get a handle on how it is playing out currently so that you can prepare people for new tactics from the federal government as well.
Exactly. And Puño does do trainings for Migra Watch, and we're hoping to work on some for the rest of this month so that people can get updated on those tactics that ICE is using, such as staging at courthouses and violating, you know, just blatantly violating both the local city as well as county laws.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about the training. But first, Adriana, can you talk about what you've been hearing from immigrants who are here without legal status about generally overarching what life has been like for them about 16 months into the second Trump administration?
Yeah, I stay in touch with a lot of families. Some of them I've done stories about. There's a lot of fear of going to see. Some of them have, you know, asylum. You know, they apply for asylum. They have, you know, some cases pending, and they're just super afraid of going to court. Finding any sort of legal help has been tough, and a lot of people call me panicking because they're going to see their day in court and they're not prepared. They're just simply not prepared, and so there's a lot of that. For those who are like fully undocumented, who do not have an asylum application pending or anything like that, it's unfortunate. It's like this kind of like getting used to living in this state of like fear, but at the same time survival mode where, and the worst can happen, but at the same time I have to go out there and work and I have to provide for my family and I have to make money. And so, for example, I text someone who's done construction in my place and I constantly said to him, like, how are you doing? And I send some of the alerts that I get from the rapid responders in my community. And he's like, Adriana, I have to be out there working. There is just no other way. And we do have a lot of a community, the long-time undocumented people. I noticed that they are super resilient. And I know this has been really horrifying. The arrests have been a lot more, predominant now, like especially last fall. But, I mean, during the Obama administration, we saw a lot of arrests. You know, during the first Trump administration, that happened too. And it slows down and it's been horrible. But, like, there is this idea of like resilience and this idea that they have to go out there and keep working. And I don't know what you guys would have to say about that, but that's what I noticed.
Yeah, jump in here. I mean, you know, just life in general, not just in Operation Midway Blitz, but this idea of living in survival mode for years at a time.
Yeah. Something that I think I just want to echo what Adriana was saying is the resiliency of the people on the ground that we've seen. And people are still going out, you know, as I just was listening, right, the weather is getting warmer. People are starting to be outside, at least in Pilsen, right? We're used to the sounds of the paleteros and the kids, like, you know, on the streets and families out with their kids, right? A lot of people. And we're hoping to see that again this year. We're hoping to continue to see the vibrancy of the community as people get more training, as people understand that, you know, what their rights are. And this is why this campaign for Know Your Rights that was really big last year and through this year has been really important for people understanding their rights and feeling a little bit more protected in case something were to happen to them, to their family members, or if they witness something. This is why we have rapid response teams all across the city and also suburbs so that people can feel a little bit more safe and going out to work. Also, even with people who are going to courthouses, we have accompaniment as well. People can call our ICER hotline, that 855-435-7693 number, and get, you know, information on how to stay safer and be more protected. So that's something that we're really working on, is people feeling safe just living, especially as the weather gets warmer, people are outside, and the vendors get there really early, right? Probably as early as the patrollers are going out in Casa de Page. So that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah, obviously, Audra, I know you write about in your reporting, but you know, part of rapid response is educating people about their rights before, during, and after an arrest or detention, Mimi, like you say. What do you want people without legal status to know? Has that message changed from Operation Midway Blitz to today?
The message is the same, right? That we all have rights, no matter what our legal status is in this country. We have the rights under the Constitution, right, of this country to not have to say anything, not have to sign anything. And it's something that's really important, I think, for people that even do get detained, is that they don't have to sign something, because unfortunately we've seen people, you know, get threatened by these agents and say, if you sign here, we'll release you. And unfortunately, they're signing their own deportation orders. So don't sign anything. Don't say anything. You are, you know, you can speak to a legal representative. If you don't have one, you can call that hotline number. And also, you don't have to answer any questions. You don't have to say anything. And for all the people that are, you know, maybe part of mixed status households, or like myself, you know, might look like something that someone that ICE would target, you also have rights to, you don't, if I'm, you know, as a U.S. citizen, you don't have to show documentation to prove your citizenship. So that's something else that we will tell people, is that flex your rights. If you have them and you know them, flex them and use them to keep yourself and your community safe.
Cristobal, can you talk about the day-to-day life of a rapid response worker, and how, what did your day look like on a typical day during Operation Midway Blitz? And what does your day today look like now, starting from, you know, when you wake up to the end of your work day?
I just remember during Operation Midway Blitz, we're just like, wow, we feel like we're living out the walking through the valley of the shadow of death every single day. Mm-hmm. It was a really stressful time here in Chicagoland. We were getting some days 20 people taken. But something that gets overlooked is all of the people that weren't taken because of all the patrollers. You know, we interrupted, we shouted out, you know, we whistled out, we honked out, you know, we did whatever we could. And that's something we're still doing today. But Operation Midway Blitz was a real, you know, a university education for me, a doctorate, you know, just in learning discipline, commitment. Even just at some points when we felt so miserable, you know, we're out there at 4:30 in the morning following ICE, you know, people filming you, filming your car, you know, just this fear. You know, I've actually felt real, you know, you rarely grow up feeling like real fear living in the suburbs. But, you know, I felt that real fear. But I love that word resilience. We say a lot resistance in Casa de Page. You know, we don't know where this is going to go, but we do know we're going to make our community proud of us. We're going to be strong right now. We're going to build people power. And I think Chicago, as much as anywhere in the world, you know, we've mobilized, we've taken the streets. It's like, as we say in Casa de Page, you know, whose streets? There are streets. And the people that we're defending every single day, you know, people forget Chicago, number one in food and beverage. I mean, these are people struggling just to go to work to make food to put on our plates. You know, this is human rights, the right to live in peace, as our dear sister Mimi is saying. But yeah, and coming to today, you know, it's lesser, but we're ready. You know, we can get hit again in any moment. And again, we are getting hit still. They've never stopped. We're seeing these lightning attacks, which in some way are even more concerning than, you know, seeing 12 ICE agents, you know, very visibly driving down the street and being able to follow them. So we want to be there in every part of the streets, particularly in the suburbs, which is a wide swath of land. You know, sometimes we have a dear brother in our patrol whose patrol goes out into the cornfields of DeKalb. You know, it's a long swath, but taking those streets because, you know, that the land belongs to those who work it. And we know the people working the hardest here in Chicagoland, and in most cases, are people without documents in the factories, in the warehouses, cutting grass, you know, laying bricks. It's our community out there, and we want to show that love right now, and not just love in word, but love in action.
And Mimi, you know, how do you respond to these more targeted lightning deportations by the federal government? I mean, how do you track people and get to the point where you can respond quickly in those situations where it's not as, you know, publicized and there's not massive groups of people around the person who's getting detained?
Yeah. So one thing that we're trying to do and we've been doing this actually from day one, is patrols, right, to try, especially in hot zone areas. Like what we've seen lately is, you know, up to, you know, four different courthouses across Cook County that we saw ICE agents at. And so making sure that we have coverage and we have patrollers so that we can, you know, act quickly when they do, you know, strike in that way. The other thing is just continuing to educate and train as many people as possible to be on the lookout, to know what ICE agents look like, how they mobilize, you know, and then be able to call that hotline number so that we can respond as quickly as possible. And also have, you know, more people trained so that more people know how to respond, that everyone has their right to record an ICE agent, right, and what they're doing. And hopefully we can also utilize that. And oftentimes what we're doing is also investigating, right? So if sometimes something happens and no one was around, but we heard about it after the fact, you know, we can investigate and we can say, okay, so, you know, so did someone record something? Can we track that person down and connect them to resources if we by chance did not get there in time? And then be able to still connect them to legal services and support.
As I mentioned, 580 people detained in the Chicago area from January 1st through the middle of March. Adriana, how does that compare to what we were seeing in the fall during Operation Midway Blitz and before?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, so if you actually look at a recent article on this analysis, you'll see that about maybe some days in September had, you know, like more than 170 arrests. Other days in October had like 200 arrests. So the number of arrests were incredibly high during the Operation Midway Blitz. Compared to now, yes, it's harder, you know, it's hard to see, okay, did they arrest then? Did they arrest? But the arrests are still happening and they're amounting to a significant number. If we compare it to years back, you know, during the first Trump administration, these arrests were also happening. And all, like I mentioned, even during the Obama administration, they were also, you know, like I think his administration deported about 3 million people from 2009 to 2016. The one thing I want to highlight, though, is that even during the slower time, it's giving some rapid responders like Cristobal and Mimi with Puño and so many other groups this ability to think about what new strategies they can use. And I was actually, you know, kind of surprised that you guys were tweaking and doing some, like, planning some really intentional block by block organizing where, like, people are sharing, like, by block, like, their cell phone numbers so that they can text each other. And also, Cristobal, you're developing this dispatch system for live reports as people are out and kind of like reporting where ICE agents could be. So it is a slower time. Arrests are still happening, but what I'm hearing from a lot of people is that they're also organizing and figuring out ways to be there to prevent and educate people mostly about their rights, not only before or while they're being detained, but also while they're in detention.
Yeah, and, you know, that brings up, we saw many warrantless arrests in the fall. We saw federal agents tear gassing protesters, shooting pepper balls at journalists. We saw elected officials even targeted, including, you know, and just everyday Chicagoans, including minors who were arrested, people detained at Broadview in bad conditions for days on end. In many of these instances, it seemed clear that the federal agents were breaking the law. Adriana, given all of that, I could see immigrants being very afraid to follow Know Your Rights guidance, because even if you have these rights, they're not necessarily going to be respected.
Exactly. I mean, there were just so many interviews I had where people knew about their rights. They went to the trainings. But then when the moment happened where they were arrested, at some point they spoke or they said something. And it was just, you know, the fear, the moment when you're, you know, maybe being harassed or being just questioned very aggressively. Everything changes. You can be so prepared and you're nervous and you might, you know, say more than what you should say. Mm-hmm. One thing that I do notice too is that you guys have also changed their training around teaching people, okay, stay calm, try to really follow, you know, this what you know about your rights and your constitutional rights. But there is also this, there are other legal ways in which you can try to not get deported and not sign your voluntary departure. You know, don't sign. Try to speak with a lawyer. Try to get representation. And there may be a chance that you were illegally arrested in violation of the Castaño-Nava case, mm-hmm. which is a 2022 settlement restricting federal immigration agents' authority to make warrantless arrests in Illinois and five other states. And, you know, and without, you know, like, if especially they didn't have probable cause. Mm-hmm. So people now are, from what I'm hearing is that those trainings are teaching people that they can have that in mind while they're in detention. And so I don't know if you guys want to say more about that, but I thought that was, you know, significant.
Well, I do want to throw this to you both in our last minute that we have here. What would you say is the goal or mission of your work going forward? And what are your thoughts on what this fight could look like 6 to 12 months down the road? Mimi, we'll start with you.
Yeah. And thank you. And I think that's really important just to reemphasize that recording what is happening and getting that out is really helpful for people who have been released from being from federal agents, you know, violating their rights and their laws and the Castaño-Nava settlement, too. We've seen people get released from detainment because of that. Unfortunately, they have sometimes gotten detained first, right? But I think one of the goals for us is really to kind of understand how this new normal, how we live in these times of new normalcy, mm-hmm. right? We're not going to see ICE agents necessarily stop in their streets, but that's what we're working towards. And we're working towards that in by block by block organizing, by, you know, being in these streets, which are, yes, our streets, also by fighting legal systems, right? And by understanding and gathering all this information and trying to change systemically what is happening, because this is a systems issue as well. And we have rights and we want them to be respected and they are being violated. So how do we stand up to that in the judicial system as well as on the streets?
Cristobal, what is the goal of your work? And
so we want to abolish ICE. I mean, that's always very clear to us every single day. You know, our goal, our short-term goal is abolishing ICE, going the whole way. Right now, we want to grow our patrollers. You know, when I was in Minneapolis, there were 3,000 people in the streets, and they're working together in a dispatch system. We want to reach those numbers.
To break down the biggest stories of the day. At the table to help me, Violet Miller, reporter with the Chicago Sun-Times, Michael Puente, WBEZ reporter and Weekend Edition anchor, and Claire Lane, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor. We started with a shout out to the moms. Here's Claire.
Well, as the mother of a canine.
Oh, there you go, dog mom.
Yes, we were
dog moms represent.
We were having all the pup cups we could get our hands on.
Lovely, beautiful. How about you, Violet?
I was working, so I spent the day reporting, but did get some time with family, so that was nice.
Great. And Michael, we're all celebrating. No mothers on the panel this morning except for dog moms, but we're all celebrating
we
mothers.
We do the work too, Mariah, and you know that.
That's
you
live true.
Well, I just said I'm married. I am married to a mother, and so we celebrated my wife Grace and had a great dinner and just made it as comfortable for her as possible.
Beautiful. We love that. All right, let's turn to some news. Claire, Chicago's Department of Public Health has weighed in on the hantavirus, and the risk to Chicagoans. Should we be worried? Fill us in here.
The short is no. The cruise ship, though, that was hit by hantavirus docked just yesterday in Spain, so it's touched land officially. But here in Chicago, health experts say that the risk for hantavirus remains very, very low. It's mostly related to the type of rodents that carry. It's the Andes virus. They live in South America, and they have not been found at all in the U.S. So the World Health Organization right now has some quarantine guidelines out. It's a 42-day quarantine period, and there is a unit in Nebraska where they have the a couple of Americans stopped and quarantined up already right now since they landed yesterday in Spain.
I'm sure that 40-day quarantine is spiking some
long
memories of COVID and those days of bringing your mattress out into the living room and doing whatever you could to entertain yourself.
Walking aimlessly around your neighborhood.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, like, how closely should we be watching these updates, though, as this carries out, knowing what we faced with COVID-19?
I think it's an interesting story, but any health expert that NPR has sort of talked to about the risk here for us, it's just very, very low.
Okay.
So we shouldn't be worried about transmission. It's not like COVID where, you know, particles in the air are going to find their way to you. It's the feces of the rodents, Mariah.
All right.
So unless you're having that direct encounter with the rodent feces, I think you're going
to
be
I try to keep my dog away from that as well.
That's something to be concerned. Look at you dog momming.
Hey, Violet, speaking of the Department of Public Health in the city, they just gave a ton of money in COVID dollars back to the federal government. What's going on here?
Yeah, about $94 million in federal grants. The mayor's office called it responsible budgeting, and the public health commissioner, Simbo Ige, said that it was a part of a restructuring of priorities last summer when the commission informed the federal government they'd be terminating these grants. Now, these were going to different equity programs across the city that sent health officials to neighborhoods that have historically been ignored. It also was funding the COVID wastewater detection system that, you know, helped the city keep informed about, you know, how COVID was spreading and where. And so, you know, without these grants, they were set to expire this July anyways, but they ended in December because this money was given back. And it has now been reported about $84 million was left unspent.
Okay. So it's not often you see an agency give money back. I imagine this has been somewhat of a controversial move. There might be some outcry over this.
Yeah. In some folks that the Chicago Tribune spoke to, you know, they said that this was a self-inflicted situation, that the department was doing it to itself. You know, these grants were terminated last summer, and then a dozen folks were laid off, you know, that fall. And so people are, you know, saying that possibly these didn't have to happen, that this funding could have gone to different things. So, yeah, definitely some anger there about this decision.
Okay. Michael, let's turn to another story we're following. This one is for car owners. It hits close to home for me, which I can talk about. But back in the day, thieves used to break in and steal a stereo. Now thefts are on the rise for a different item.
That's right. And it's not a catalytic converter. It's not your stereo. It's for your airbag.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a rise in airbag thefts around the Chicago area. According to our colleagues at the Sun-Times, 34 of them have come out of Lakeview, 18 occurred in Humboldt Park, and you got like 14 on the south side around Grand Boulevard. So it's a rise because there's a black market for these airbags. They're hard to come by, especially for Honda and Acura vehicles. So yeah, it's a hot commodity out there, so protect your airbag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happened to me twice in the past month where there was such a back order of parts that it took about 3 to 4 weeks to fix my car the first time. And they smash a window, grab the airbag, nothing else. They didn't want my fancy Blick art markers, a case of like 64 I had in my backseat. I know, right? But then I got the car back and it happened again 2 days later. Chicago police are giving out, and they probably still have some left, steering wheel bars to help deter in whatever way that helps. So I got one of those, and fingers crossed.
Sorry you're going through that, but it's like a blast from the 80s having steel wheel bars right there.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And I will say that, you know, community groups on Facebook and whatnot have actually been quite helpful with this. In my neighborhood, I'm on the north side in Ravenswood, and there was an instance a couple of weeks ago, one block got 4 or 5 cars in a row just targeted for these things. And people are trying to issue warnings and let people know that the city can get you those wheel locks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you see shattered glass on the ground, that's probably a sign that your block might be targeted. Violet, what is driving the demand for airbags?
Yeah, so as Mike mentioned, these specific Takata airbags, there was a recall of 67 million of them, and there is simply not enough capacity to replace the demand at this point because of how many have been recalled, you know, cars dating back years and years. And so, you know, the black market has had this uptick in interest because, you know, they simply can't replace these fast enough. So, you know, whereas airbags might be very expensive to get brand new, getting them used can be a little bit cheaper. And so now there's a market for it. And so, you know, some former CPD officials saying that sometimes these guys work with local shops to kind of filter them in through the black market so they have a steady supply, things like that. So, again, they just recommend, like you guys said, that steering wheel bar.
Yeah. Claire, as the weather gets nicer, we're seeing more pests. And a new report finds that Chicago sees more than others. What's going on here?
So there's a new analysis by our friends over at Orkin, which is saying that Chicago is now one of the worst cities for mosquitoes. So this is, again, according to Orkin, a pest control company, but Chicago is now number two in the country behind only Los Angeles for the number of mosquito treatments that it's doing.
Okay, and obviously this report comes from a pest control company. So is there a conflict of interest here? How much stock do we put in this?
Well, it depends how you look at it. As we love to wait for Orkin's survey every year about Rattiest City, remember that one? So that's a similar like
a study. Kind of a badge of honor, you know?
It is.
Like being in the rattiest seat. So not really, but
so they're kind of using that same data. I mean, it is data. They're just using the number of new residential mosquito treatments that they perform Orkin exclusively over a one-year span. So this was looking at Chicago and other cities across the country between March 2025 and March 2026. But what's interesting, too, is that Springfield, Illinois, according to Orkin, cracked the top 50 in mosquito treatments for the first time. So they're in the cities. They're also across the state.
Okay. Do you guys get bad mosquito bites? I get them really bad. I know it depends on something that I'm not sure about. I just think it's because I'm so sweet.
That's got to be it, right? I'm going to start telling myself the same.
Yeah. Michael, in sports, the Bulls had a lucky day yesterday. What happened?
Absolutely. You know, if you're a Bulls fan, we have been waiting. This is really one of the most exciting days ever to be a Bulls fan. Well, at least in the last 30 years since Michael left. The Bulls got the fourth overall draft pick. So people are like debating who maybe the Bulls are going to get. I think on the top of a lot of people's list is Cam Boozer out of Duke. Okay. He's the son of former Chicago player Carlos Boozer. And so he would be a great pick. You've got Caleb Wilson from North Carolina. So, you know, who's ever available for our new VP, Bryson Graham, he's going to have just a great pick. You know, he has this what's called the SLAP criteria: size, length, athleticism, and physicality. But, you know, we cannot get this pick wrong. I mean, this is as momentous as when the Bulls picked Michael Jordan in the third pick overall back in, 84? So this
I'd
is a big deal.
I'd assume he was the first. It's
a very talented draft class.
I think Sam Bowie was the first that year. Okay. And he didn't, and I forgot who the second player was.
I mean, how big is this? Is this going to help the Bulls turn themselves around next season?
Do we need a head coach first, maybe?
Well, right. They got to hire somebody there. The thing about college basketball players, they can have an immediate impact more than any other sport.
Okay.
Maybe football, there's a little bit where a rookie can come in and make a deep impact, but definitely in basketball. They're going to go to the playoffs next year? Probably not, but in the next coming years, it could be a huge, huge impact for the Bulls.
What key position should they really put stock in? Like, what is
good
their
players?
At this point, all of them.
Okay.
Well, they're looking for people who can play defense.
It's a total rebuild. Sure.
Yeah.
Defense is the key. The Bulls just have played horrible defense, especially this past year. They need people who are stoppers. And Cam Boozer is definitely one of those people who
they need someone scrappy.
D. Absolutely.
Claire, what other stories are you following?
I don't know if you're a fan of encased meats of any kind.
Yeah.
Hot dog, maybe pulled sausage.
Yeah.
But Maxwell Street Polish, a famed Chicago hot dog stand, it's going to have a new home soon enough. This is Jim's original, moving its flagship location due to what was planned redevelopment by their landlord, which happens to be the University of Illinois at Chicago. But sometimes reporting that the plans for this redevelopment are essentially forcing them out, and they will have to vacate by by the end of June.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to get your summer dog from the original gyms, it's going to have to be before June. Their new location will be in Pilsen on West 18th Street, and that's scheduled not to open until the fall. So you want to get your fix.
Get it in now.
Get it in now. Get them while they're hot, right?
We're a couple weeks into May now, speaking of good weather and summer. Over the weekend, a classic sign of summer arrived. Chicago's Buckingham Fountain turned on. Do any of you make a visit in the summer? Or are you kind of like too hardcore Chicagoan to go see the Buckingham Fountain
you
downtown?
You know what? I'm in the city a lot. Obviously, I don't live here. But I love this city. You know, any chance I get to be sort of a tourist looking at the architecture, sure, yeah, the Buckingham Fountain is top on the list because it is just so beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. Violet?
Yeah, I've got some friends coming to town this week, so I have a feeling that'll be among the stops. But yeah, it's certainly lost its charm for me a little bit.
Okay.
I think the last time I was there, like, 3 years ago, so it's been a while.
You were probably reporting.
I in fact, was. Yeah. It's when it was dyed red, yes. So mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want to make a point of clarification. Hakeem Olajuwon was the number one pick in the 84 draft, followed by Sam Bowie, and then the number third pick, Michael Jordan.
All right, so all right.
I had to get that in there.
Oh, yeah, of course. Thank you so much. Anything else you all are looking forward to as the weather warms up? I love a promontory point, like full day of jumping in the lake and then laying out, getting some food in Chinatown on the way home.
You know, of course, I'm a huge White Sox fan. So you got the White Sox and the Cubs battling this weekend. And the Sox are doing surprisingly well. The Cubs are probably the favorite to win the World Series, but you've got two, you know, you got one powerhouse offense with the Cubs with an up and coming power offense with the White Sox. Should be a good series this week.
Mm-hmm. Any other stories y'all are following?
Murakami is just so fun to watch. Sox too. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm actually, you know what? I'm looking forward to him taking the lead on home runs.
Okay. Yeah. Are you counting them?
Yeah.
Okay.
15 now?
All right, perfect.
Yeah. He's up there, him and Judge battling it out to the top.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.